Hello, and welcome to the TI Fluid Systems PLC announcement of first quarter trading statement conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Hans Dieltjens, CEO and President of TI Fluid Systems PLC. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for our first 2022 trading update. I'm Hans Dieltjens, the CEO and President of TI Fluid Systems, and I'm joined today by our CFO, Ron Hundzinski. Well, we are delighted to be back in London here after more than 2 years away, as we dealt with the travel and health safety protocols presented by the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm sure you all have seen the trading update we released this morning, but I would like to reiterate that the company continues to support its employees in dealing with the effects of the ongoing macroeconomic impacts, the COVID pandemic, and the Russia-Ukraine war. We are really proud of the engagement our employees had and still have at a personal level to help those affected by any of these impacts. Before handing over to Ron, I want to say that Q1 2022 has been a challenging quarter for the company, but more specifically for our industry, as we continue to face the impacts of persistent inflationary cost pressures, shortages, COVID-19 related customer shutdowns, and obviously the war in Ukraine. We continue to make every effort to mitigate these impacts under these challenging conditions. Notwithstanding above, I am very pleased with the significant gains we are making in executing our Take the Turn electrification strategy, and we recorded 427 million euros of lifetime revenue bookings awards for battery electric vehicle programs in the quarter. These awards reconfirm the robustness of our strategy and assure the company's success in pivoting to electrification. Light vehicle production volumes and cost inflation remain, however, very uncertain, but we continue to expect our performance to be resilient as we recover excess costs from our customers. We provide more context to our profitability throughout the year in our outlook statement. Margins in the first half of 2022 are expected to be moderately below the second half of 2021. This is due to cost pressures and recovery lag and volume volatility expected in quarter two. We anticipate full year global production volumes to be below 2021 levels. With the assumption that the commodity prices and inflationary pressures do not deteriorate significantly further, we expect margin expansion in the second half of the year as customer pricing recoveries are realized and to achieve full year margins slightly below 2021. With that, I will now hand over the call to Ron to highlight a few items of our Q1 2022 trading update. Ron?
Thank you, Hans, and good morning, everyone. The group generated revenue of 755 million euros in the first quarter of 2022. As Hans has mentioned, the first quarter experienced yet again a volatile global vehicle production environment and market turbulence, which continues to impact specific OEM plant uptime scheduling. Global light vehicle production decreased 4.5% compared to Q1 2021. Our revenue decreased by 7.7% year-over-year at constant currency. This represents underperformance of 320 basis points. At actual rates, the group managed to outperform the market by 40 basis points. Our segments were extremely disproportionately affected by the ongoing challenges. Fluid Carrying Systems, FCS, revenue decreased by 1.9% year-over-year on a constant currency basis to 428 million euros and outperformed the market by 260 basis points. primarily driven by the ramp-up of new BEV and HEV business launches in Europe and North America, as we saw in the past. Fuel tank and delivery systems, FTDS, revenue decreased 14.3% year-over-year on a constant currency basis to 327 million euros. FTDS was disproportionately affected by the COVID-19-related customer shutdowns in China and the anticipated lower year-over-year launch activity in the quarter. Turning to the regions, European region revenue decreased by 9.4% year-over-year at constant currency and significantly outperformed European production by 560 basis points. European revenue was driven primarily by favorable new electric vehicle business launches, which offset the impacts of customer scheduling volatilities in the region arising from the Ukraine conflict. Asia-Pacific region revenue decreased by 7.7% year-over-year on a constant currency basis and underperformed Asia-Pacific light vehicle production by 790 basis points. The Asia-Pacific region, which is heavily influenced by the China market, experienced wide-ranging supply chain disruptions, extended COVID-19-related customer shutdowns, as well as unfavorable mix. In North America, revenue decreased by 3.6% year-over-year on a constant currency basis and underperformed North America light vehicle production by 180 basis points. This slight underperformance was caused by the expected lower launch activity compared to Q1 of 2021. With that, I will hand the call back to Hans.
So, in summary, Q1 2022 was a challenging quarter for TI Fluid Systems and our industry, but the company remains well positioned to manage through the turbulent market conditions and continues to take advantage of the transition to electrical vehicles. We will keep our focus on financial discipline to deliver strong revenue, profitability, and cash generation. So with that, I would like to open the phone line for any of your questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 if you wish to ask a question. And we will take our first question from Akshat Kacher from JP Morgan.
Morning, Hans and Ron. Akshat from JP Morgan. Three questions from me, please. The first one on your global light vehicle production estimate of a year-on-year decline in 2022 versus 21. I just want to understand the different building blocks here and your forecast by region. If we look at IHS forecast from yesterday, they're still looking for double-digit growth in Europe and North America. So just want to understand where do you differ mainly in your forecast. The second one was on the underperformance, specifically in FTDS. You did mention China. You mentioned specific launch schedules in North America. Can you just share your expectations for this division specifically for the full year? Any meaningful ramp-ups coming in the coming quarters that could improve outperformance other than the improving regional mix? And the last question is on your BEV bookings of $500 million roughly in the first quarter. Definitely a very strong run rate versus what you showed in 2020 and 2021. And I think it shows the great potential that you have here to grow the business. Can you just share more details on this order win, if possible, please? Was it with the new OEM or a big global platform, maybe? Those were the three questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Akshat. Maybe I'll start with the last question, as this is obviously the most positive one for us to answer. The 427 million of bookings are obviously a reconfirmation of our strength that we're seeing in our pivot to the electrification. It's a large European OEM that we booked some large global platform wins in mainly the coolant side of the electrical vehicle business. That was a very strong set of awards for us. As we look forward into the year, we do expect a continuation of this set of awards to lead us to a full year of a very strong and a very robust set of business wins. You also can see that this business wins are roughly a half of the total business wins or total business bookings that we have done in Q1. Also in that respect, we continue to progress very well and very enthusiastically for our future. Right. If you talk about the global light vehicle production forecast, as you saw and as may be anticipated in the market, we are a little bit on the careful side. You have to understand that what we do is that we look first at our numbers, we look at our call-offs, we look at our customers' behaviors, we look what is really happening in China on the floor there and how this is progressing. With that, we have really reconfirmed what we said earlier in the year, is that we expected earlier volumes to be about the same, about a similar range than last year, and we actually expect still the same, although maybe slightly lighter because of the recent events in China. If you look at that regionally, we do expect still Europe and North America to be somewhat better than we expected for Asia Pacific, basically because of the reasons I just mentioned. If you then look at your second question, the underperformance in China and North America, this is mainly the main drivers in North America were first that this is our FTDS division. They had first quite a strong quarter last year. That obviously plays an effect here, but also the launches, the amount of launches that we saw in Q1 were somewhat underperforming, quite planned to be underperforming, but we do not expect that to continue through the rest of the year, and we do expect to recover from that actually quite soon as we go forward. For China, I think the whole industry saw the drop now resulting from the shutdowns and the quarantines that are happening all over. We were mainly affected in our plants in Tianjin, Changchun, where we saw quite a significant drop. Actually in April, it was about 50% of the business that went down there. What do we see going forward? We do see some level of improvement there. We think it could be back to a 60%-70% as we go forward in May, June. Again, the situation there remains very volatile. The effect for us was a little bit worse because what you could see, the mix change was mainly a mix change towards some electrical vehicle manufacturers like Wuling or BYD, Tesla, where we historically did not have the highest level of content with. We saw some of this mix change affecting us temporarily a little bit stronger, and especially our FTDS division that was by this mix change towards electrification hit a little bit stronger than the market. As said, I think looking forward, we do not think that this is and do not consider and in our analysis, we do not think that this will continue to any respect.
Understood. Thank you, Hans.
We will now take the next question from Christoph Laskawi from Deutsche Bank.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one will be on FTDS as well. Could you comment on the Q2 run rate? Do you already see an improvement versus Q1, sequentially speaking, or is that still say, in flight as the volatility remains high, and you at this point in time cannot really tell? And then looking at competitors' ambitions in that field, which are trying to gain quite significant market share on top of what they currently already have. Do you see this in the RFQs that you are entering in that division already, that some of the competitors would be pitching more aggressively or not really visible at present? And then on the outlook or essentially on negotiations with OEMs, are you confirming the expectation to pass on around 65-75% of the inflation? And where do you currently stand with that? Was there already an impact in Q1? Thank you.
Okay, so on your first question, do we see for FTDS the Q2 rate being better? I think you have to see that in Q2, you had the month of April, what was a very low month, especially in China, is that about a 50% production. I think it was like 46%, yeah, to be accurate,
yeah,
of reduction of production volumes there. So we will, through Q2, see this effect being gradually improved, but at least the first months of Q2, we will see a remaining effect of these issues. Do we see competitors in the FTDS field? I think that was your question. Do we see competitors try to gain market share there? You have to see that FTDS business itself, it's a very sticky business. The fuel tank and the pump and module business is something you develop for 2-3 years. You launch the capacity. It goes through about a year of validation prior the product is really launched. So it's a very sticky business. There's very rarely competitors to step in during programs. So we do not necessarily see that there is an aggressive path of competitors trying to gain the market share from us. There is a second point is that OEMs are trying to carry over business, what means that there is a current launched platform, and in order to avoid future investments, they're trying to use the existing platforms or the existing products and components for the next platform, and with that, that means that this business remains sticky for especially into the FTDS range, where you have big, larger investments and larger validation cycles. What do we see for the outlook on recoveries? We, as I explained and some other occasions, is that you have some part of our recoveries that are indexed, and these recoveries generally have some lag as long as the price goes higher. You look backwards, like 3 months to half a year backwards, in order to set a price going forward, and that lag is about a 15-20% of recoveries that you will be missing, but that will pick up as we go forward. We are currently at a level, it's around 40% of recoveries. So with that pickup and with the additional negotiations that we're doing with our customer base, we do consider that the range between 65 or 75% is absolutely confirmed for us, and that is what we will manage and deal with going forward.
Very clear. Thank you.
We will now take the next question from Vanessa Jeffries from Jefferies.
Hi, I was just wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about light vehicle production volumes and what you see as the probability of that outcome as a slight contraction and maybe more of a range that you see. And second question is around the BEV bookings and what you've seen in content per vehicle and if that's progressing as expected.
The EV content?
The EV content per vehicle, it's about the same as we saw historically. We didn't publish it. We don't publish it per quarter, but it's similar to what we saw historically. It really confirms our potential that we have in this business. As we've said, we have a higher opportunity when it comes to EV, and we see that materialized also in the EV content. When it comes to the light production vehicle, you asked for a range there. Our range would currently be something between $75 million-$77 million. That's what we are currently looking at. Now, we have to reiterate how careful we have to be about this because the volatility in the market is still extremely high. And I think nobody can predict any other outbreak or any other quarantine in China or anywhere else in the world, for that matter, that this will pick up again, or there is additional escalation in the war, or the shortages of the chips have still not been fully resolved, as you know, among other shortages that the industry is facing. So we want to be very careful in what we communicate here. But then again, with what we see in the market, with what our information is telling us, that's roughly the range that we would be looking at. We would be very happy to look at a higher range as well, believe us. We just try to be realistic and set the company also ready for a realistic volume so we can prove our resilient margins, and we can assure that the company delivers under the deteriorating conditions. Okay, any more questions?
One more. Yep, and we will take our next question from Sanjay Bhagwani from Citi.
Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my question also. I've got two questions mainly. First one is on the FTDS underperformance. It's more of a follow-up to Akshat's question. Do you really see any structural element in this? For example, as you mentioned, in China, some of these newcomers, they continue to gain market share, so probably mix is still going to be unfavorable. And on the top of that, these car makers themselves are basically proposing to reduce the number of variants for their combustion engine cars. So is there an element of that you see is going to impact going forward? And my second question is a bit more interesting than my first one. So that the order book looks really, really exciting for the BEVs. Could you maybe provide some color? Who were the key competitors you were bidding against? And basically, why did your customers choose you? And more importantly, is there like a difference, pricing difference across the peers, or pricing is not really a differentiating factor here? Thank you.
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first on the FTDS underperformance in China, I spoke about some newcomers, but just let me clarify it. The newcomers there that I referenced you, it's actually not really newcomers. I mean, the Tesla, BYD, and Wuling. But these are car manufacturers. There's not competitors. But these are car manufacturers that manufacture generally electrified cars, right? So for FTDS, this means FTDS supplies only ICE-related components. So for that division, if these car manufacturers grow, it obviously means a market that they cannot handle or they cannot supply products to, right? So that's something that we saw specifically now in the mix, because the whole market is down in China, but you could see that the mix was a little bit more in favor of the electrical vehicles. What we do believe is a very temporarily effect here resulting from the shutdowns, and that gave FTDS an overproportional impact as the mix moved to the electrified vehicles. I hope that clarifies somewhat the position there of FTDS in China. When you look at the order book and our competitors in the battery electrical field, they're roughly the same competitors as we mentioned historically, where you have in this coolant, you have people like Texas or Hutchinson, Cooper Standard, you have the SDA, and other competitors that are there, right? There's not really a new entrance there that is starting to play a very important role into that. But I think your question was very good of why did TI win this business and this important set of business and other competitors. I do think there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is our very strong and historic relationship with some of these customers. We have been for some of them about 100 years a supplier, and that strong relationship means that it's we are perfectly fit to support them with this sort of product range. We are close to them with our engineering, with our development, with our manufacturing. Second part is our vast footprint that we can supply, especially these global platforms on a global scale. We have facilities close to them historically, and it's not just the facilities. We also have the engineering capabilities locally for them in all the regions in order to support them. And then a third, I believe, important aspect is our engineering and engineering capability. We have developed specific products for usage in the coolant and in the refrigerant systems, but our lightweight plastic solutions, as I explained historically, and these offer obviously the weight savings and the weight savings and the assembly savings for our customers. And then last but not least, we are entering the field of the modularity of supply into this, and this is it's moving more from a lines and connector business into a more modular structure, and we have specific technologies in the modular structure, what is very interesting for our customers. And actually a big customer where what we talked about in Q1 awards was specifically interested in that, and that made a considerable difference in how we could win this business. So so to your last point there is, are we winning this because we are dropping the price or we have some entry conditions? I would say no to that point. That's not what we are doing. We are using our full benefit of our scale engineering capabilities and our customer relationships in order to move forward significantly in this pivot to electrification.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Yeah.
And again, as a reminder, to ask a question, press star one. We will now take the next question from Dominic Convey from Numis.
Good morning, gents. Thanks for taking the question. Just can you give us a little bit more color around your expectations for the margin profile H1, H2 this year? I think ordinarily, if we go back in time, the business was typically slightly H1 weighted. It feels as though that we're going to see another year that is more predominantly weighted towards the second half. Does sort of 45-55 in terms of EBIT sound about the right split, which obviously is based on the margin guidance you've given this morning? And I guess the real question for me is, to what extent does that incremental recovery assumed in the second half rely on volume as opposed to simply price catch-up on inflation? And then I think second question really just related to that, can you give us an update on specifically what levels of inflation you're seeing in terms of wage inflation, raw materials, freight, logistics, et cetera?
Okay, all right. Well, thank you very much. Actually, I think the I think I would like to hand it to you, Ron, okay, to answer some of this.
So I'll talk about the margin profile. So the way to look at this is actually Hans indicated this a little bit about the recoveries in the last half of last year, our recoveries hovered around, say, 43%. And we also said that that was on the indexed items. As we go into the first half of this year, we saw significant inflation in areas that are not indexed. For example, labor, particularly in North America, energy in Europe, and logistics pretty much throughout the world. Those items are not indexed. So the margin profile from the last half of last year deteriorated to the first half of this year, primarily because those items were not being able to get recovered. Okay, so that's the impact. It's not volume per se. It's mostly additional inflationary items that were not recoverable with our customers at this point. Now, as we go forward into the second half of this year, those items, the non-indexed items, are being negotiated with our customers, and we expect some recovery on those items. In addition, the time lags that Hans has already mentioned on the indexed items will start to increase the second half of the year as well. So the second half of the year, we're not banking on volumes to generate margin. We're quite frankly have negotiated and worked with our customers to get recovery to get the margin profile to improve in the second half of the year. So it's not volume driven. Remember, year over year, we're basically flat. So I'll stop there. Maybe, Hans, you want to talk about the inflationary environment, what we're seeing now? I think it was the third question.
Yeah, well, maybe a slightly more color on the H1, H2. If you look at volume, H1 could well be around 37 million. H2 could be around 39 million. So you see a little bit of pickup around that in our estimates, but it's not going to be the main driver, as Ron said, of the EBIT pickup in H2. What will mainly be driven by the inflationary recoveries in that period, that lag is gone, and the negotiations with our customers are done at that point in time, and the implementation of the recoveries is in full play. If we look at the level of inflation we're currently seeing, well, what we're currently seeing, as Ron mentioned, in Europe, you can see a lot of energy inflation. Well, not overall in Europe, you can see specific countries with a high level of energy inflation, and some up to three times as high as historically seen. We can see the majority of our increases are obviously on the raw material side, partially on the component side. We buy also a lot of components from our suppliers. That is a very important inflationary increase. It's actually a pass-through of the raw materials of our suppliers towards us. And then to a lesser extent, you can see the labor inflation and the energy inflation and the logistics inflation to a lesser extent materializing. You could say that slightly more than half of the inflationary increases that we're seeing are coming from the raw materials and the raw material side, and that the rest is then split between the other elements.
Conversion cost.
Of our business, the conversion cost of our business.
Thank you.
Okay. There are no more questions then, and in closing, I would like to thank you for participating today. We look forward to further update you on our progress in August with our half year results. So thank you very much, and see you soon. With that, operator, please disconnect the call. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.